turning astray of the path that was left long ago. All we leave behind, time after time, is a legacy with nothing to show. Now our country is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave?
Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue, another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is number 98, and what we're going to talk about today is cultural capital. This is the eighth of the eight different kinds of capital that were first discussed by Ethan C. Rowland. Well, they were probably discussed before that, but the one that I am familiar with is his article on it from Appleseed Permaculture. And we've looked at all the other ones, and so this is the last one of that series, and it's cultural capital. So stay tuned for that. Before we do that, I want to give a little bit of introductory material. First of all, make sure that you are following us on all the various social media, Twitter and YouTube and Facebook at the current time, and telling our friends and family about that as well would be able to be a great way to continue to get the word out about the Legacy Podcast. Make sure that you're signed up as a registered user of the website. That enables you to get email updates. Anytime there is a new post or a new podcast that comes out, you'll be notified by email. That way you can keep abreast of the new information, and it's the most efficient way for you to do that. And then also make sure that you're visiting our affiliates. There are several different endorsed affiliates that we have on the Legacy Podcast that have something to do with building a legacy and leaving a legacy. And they are ones that I personally endorse because I've either used their products or their services, or I am very familiar with them to the point where I can personally endorse them. And the first, the two up for today is Gurney's. In fact, I just purchased $200 worth of material from Gurney's just the other day. And of course, with all the discounts and everything, it came out to be about $100. So they have some great coupons and discounts over at Gurney's and a wide selection of material. And so check out Gurney's for all of your gardening seeds and plants and shrubs and trees, that kind of thing. Second up is 48 Days. 48 Days is the work of Dan Miller's organization. And 48 Days has as a focus trying to get you into the dream job or get you into the dream career in terms of self-employment that you've always wanted to be in. And so they have all kinds of material that can walk you through that. They've got a community over there that you can plug into to get help and all kinds of resources, books, and that kind of thing. And so if you want to check those out, that'd be a great thing. I recommend getting 48 Days to the Work You Love if you want to be employed. If you want to be self-employed, getting the work, the book 48 Days to Creative Income. And you can also get the one No More Mondays would be kind of a combination of the two. And then he's got a new book out called When Wisdom Meets Passion. All of those are great resources over there at 48 Days. So check out that. And then finally, if you like the show and you want to support the show, the best way of doing that, besides visiting our sponsors and telling us, telling about us to your friends and family and spreading the word about that, is becoming a Legacy Partner. Our Legacy Partner program is $30 a year. With that, you have exclusive access to our members only page that has discounts and downloadable PDFs and ebooks and things like that that you can access. Check that out on the website. You can get some more information about that. It's $30 a year, $50 worth of value, and you support the show by doing so. So consider becoming a Legacy Partner. Well, that takes care of the introductory segment. So now let's go ahead and take care of the content of cultural capital. And before we do that, I want to just summarize the various forms of capital that we've looked at so far. First has been social capital. Second was material capital. Third, financial capital. Fourth, living capital. And fifth, intellectual capital. And number sixth is experiential or human capital. Number seventh is spiritual capital. And now, of course, we're on number eight, which is cultural capital. First thing we want to do then is ask, what is cultural capital? Well, the French sociologist Pierre Bourdieu was the one who pretty much came up with the idea or came up with the concept, and he was working with some of his colleagues developing a concept of cultural capital to help explain some of the reasons why, even though there have been other forces at work, there still remains a discrepancy between the rich and the poor. And so he was trying to look at it from an economical standpoint and come up with an explanation for the disparity in educational attainment of children from different social classes. And he came up with this concept of cultural capital. It's shared internal and external processes of a community. And it's characterized by refined taste and manners and good education. That's when someone says that they are cultured, or, you know, might hear someone who's got a refined culture. What they're talking about there is someone who has refined taste, manners, and good education. You know, back years ago, it used to be that you had Miss Manners and Emily Post and the etiquette book and all those kinds of things. That was all trying to teach you to be proper in etiquette, proper in conduct, proper in manners, which would contribute to the cultural capital of the community. And of course, you look back to bygone days in England and Europe, where there was much more formalities involved in various things, and part of that was embedded in their culture. And then it's manifested in arts and various types of achievements like that. Webster's defines culture as a particular form of civilization, especially the beliefs, customs, arts, and institutions as a society at any given time. And so if you break it down based upon the description there, what you have is you have cultural capital being the accumulation of beliefs and the accumulation of customs, the accumulation of arts, the accumulation of institutions that contribute to the standard of living, contribute to the way of life of the people involved. So that's what cultural capital is. And what is unique about cultural capital is that it's the only one that can, of all the various forms of capital, it's the only one that really can only be formed in the context of a group, or developed in the context of a group. And so we have various groups that we can look at, and we're just going to look at a few of those as they relate to this cultural capital. And the first one I want to focus on is the family. And there's a family culture, or at least there should be a family culture in every family. And I'm not talking necessarily about an ethnic family or, you know, something like that. You know, I don't know if any of you saw the big Greek wedding and how, you know, there was so much of the Greek culture in that, with the father always thinking everything went back to the Greek language and all. It was pretty funny, pretty funny story, not necessarily the most family friendly one, but it was a pretty humorous movie. But that's not necessarily what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the culture that develops inside a particular nucleus family. So that would include maybe some of the rules that you might have in your home that develop a certain culture. Maybe it would consider some of the roles that are played within that family. Maybe, you know, you've divided up certain responsibilities between the husband and the wife, and that becomes a cultural idea. And then your children, of course, pick up on that, and they project that on themselves as they get older, and that becomes their paradigm from which they are to direct their lives. And then maybe some of the habits that you have as a family, some of the things that you typically do. Of course, every family has very particular ways of doing different things and looking at different things, and that's all part of the family culture. Various activities that you might be involved in. You know, there's some families that are very musically inclined, and they may even travel around as, you know, groups, singing groups or gospel groups or whatever they might be, and they develop a culture doing that. And it is a part of their life and a part of their way of life to be in that. And of course, the beliefs that the family has, that develops a type of cultural standard for the family. And then in business also, there is a culture. And I can probably, without naming some, you could probably take some time and you could think of some companies that have very distinct cultures about them that are very noticeable, or at least have been identified by others. I think of Apple. And, you know, if you go into an Apple store, there's a particular culture that you find there. It's a very techie culture. You know, the people aren't wearing suits. There's no, you know, real high pressure sales people, that kind of thing. It's very techie. They're, you know, they've got all their gadgets on them, and they, you know, they go through the various formalities of, you know, bringing you through the various stages of sales, but they do it in such a way that it's very technical, technologically inclined. And, you know, the people that work there, you know, they may be more artsy in some ways, and, you know, it's just they've got their culture. And you can look into this. Of course, you could read all kinds of articles about Apple and their culture and that kind of thing. And then, you know, I listen to Dave Ramsey a lot, and Dave Ramsey talks about this even in his book Entre Leadership, which is a great book, by the way. If you haven't picked one up, you should pick it up and read it, particularly if you have any kind of business that you do currently, or you want to get into business yourself. It'd be a great book. But he talks about the culture of that company, and one of the things he talks about is that they have a culture that you know, contributes to this, their policy of no gossip. And the people themselves have been so ingrained in that if someone begins to gossip, they catch it right away. And it's just so foreign to their culture because they developed that in them. And yeah, I think of Starbucks. If you go to Starbucks, you know, there's a certain culture about the people that work there, the environment that they have set up. And that's all intentional to be able to project a certain stereotype upon the consumer of it. And then also Walmart, you know, there's a stereotype, there's a type of culture that is that Walmart has that people can see. And you know, sometimes I'll mention this later, but sometimes these projected cultures and even the cultures in reality can be good or they can be bad based upon different factors. You know, a good article, I'm going to put in the show notes a good article to read on business culture. There's several of them out there, but I'm going to put one of them in there that talks about some of the ways in which to develop culture in your company and to identify the culture that is there. And then also, not only in business and in the family, but also in the community, you can see that there is a cultural asset that is there many times, or at least a cultural peculiarity that can be an asset to some. And as I mentioned earlier, sometimes it can be a liability. But you think of New Orleans, and New Orleans has this French culture about it. It's got a particular type of influence from the French back when it was, you know, a French colony before it became part of the Louisiana Purchase. And this culture that is in New Orleans has its own food, it has its own names, has its own music. And, you know, even the street names down there are based upon this French culture. You got Bourbon Street, and you've got, you know, festivals like Mardi Gras and things like that that are all based upon this concept of the culture surrounding New Orleans. And then you look at Texas. Texas got its own culture as well. It's kind of the cowboy culture, the liberty-minded culture, and, you know, very based upon freedom and the open range and things like that. New England also has its own culture. You go up to New England and there's, you know, these quaint, you know, country villages that, you know, have very few people, but they're, you know, tight-knit communities and things like that. And that's a type of a culture. And, of course, that's not to even begin to talk about the various dialects that are found all over the United States that contribute to some of this culture. And I'll mention that again here briefly. You know, where I live in our county, there's a culture much different than what you might find, of course, in New York City or even in Richmond, which is only an hour away. We've got a much different culture out here in the country than we do in Richmond. And then there's various community subgroups within communities that, you know, would be classified as a particular type of culture. And again, I'm not making any position here on, you know, whether I like these or not. Obviously, you can gather that from my stances on other things. But there's the homosexual community, and there's the Christian community, and the homeschooling community. All these are various types of cultures and subcultures within the community. And, I think of the homeschooling movement, and the homeschooling culture that is there. And, you know, even in that, there's a certain dress code, there's certain characteristics and qualities that people make. You know, we always laugh about how homeschooling families, you know, they always have the, you know, the minivans or the 12 passenger vans because they got the big families and, you know, the wives typically, you know, make their own bread, and they, you know, they do their own grinding of their own wheat, all these kinds of things. Different cultures that are there based upon, sometimes it's peer pressure, sometimes it's just, you know, being following after someone else that may be an admirable person or, you know, whatever it is, but it develops a certain like a culture. And then there's ethnic groups all over the land. We think of the Hispanic culture that is in the United States right now, and how that is contributing to the United States culture as well as being distinct from it and maintaining their own separateness in some regards. And there's the, you know, the African-American community and the culture that is there. And, you know, even to the language of Ebonics and this whole concept there of teaching according to their own culture. And then you've got, you know, in cities for the longest time, you've had places like Chinatown and all where people of their own culture get together and create their own community. And, you know, that can be a great asset in that cultural community. And then, you know, in the nation, there are certain values, certain beliefs, certain standards, certain culture that develops from a country. Thinking, you know, in our country, it was founded upon the Judeo-Christian principles and the Judeo-Christian ideas and concepts that are found there. And so that was what made up the United States to begin with, and a lot of the principles that are found there. That's a culture. Then you've got other places such as communist countries where there is another culture that's developed, a secular state where, you know, God is out of the picture. And then, you know, Muslim countries have quite a different culture because, of course, they are, especially those that are the most conservative, there's a real real display of their culture, both in their dress as well as in their actions. And then, you know, the French, we've always been told about the French culture and how so many people go to France to become cultured. And if you go to Epcot Center and Disney World or Disneyland, I don't know how many of y'all have been there or not, but if you go to Epcot, you can see some of these cultural distinctions, particularly in Europe and other places. But if you go from place to place, you're kind of immersed, although it's, you know, it's marketed for the consumer. But nonetheless, there's still this culture that is found worldwide within countries. And then, you know, I don't want to forget, obviously, or miss out on mentioning the whole concept of the pop culture in the U.S. in particular, but I'm sure this is found in other countries like England and things like that. But there's this pop culture that develops. And, of course, with that comes their own music and their own styles of dress, their own artistic expressions. All of these things are cultural phenomena that provide an asset or a liability, and so would fall under the concept of cultural capital. I remember this is related to the whole idea of sometimes this cultural baggage or cultural capital can be either good or bad. I remember when I was in seminary, my homiletics professor talked to us about accents, and he told us that we need to speak general American English, and that we're not to sound like we're from New England, we're not to sound like we're too much from the South, or that we're from the West, or, you know, whatever dialect there is, that instead we should try to sound like general American English, and that will enable us to appeal to more people. And so what is he doing there is he's actually trying to take away some of the cultural distinctiveness that is found in most people, and instead become a generalist. And so what we need to do then, just by way of some application, is we need to embrace the cultural capital that is beneficial. Every one of us is a product of the culture around us, and we have developed certain customs and certain beliefs and certain standards and certain practices. And some of those can be good and some of them can be bad. We need to evaluate which ones are positive and which ones are negative, and eliminate those that are negative and embrace those that are positive, and work at removing the cultural barriers that prevent us from growing developing more abundance. And that reminds me of just one last aspect that I wanted to cover, and that is, you know, this is the eighth of the eight level or types of capital. And so I want to just kind of do some things by way of review. And the first is, why is it that we want to acquire more and develop more capital in our life? And this would include not only cultural capital here, but all the other seven forms that we have looked at over time. And why is it that we want to develop this kind of capital? Well, as you know, the Legacy Podcast is all about building a multi-generational legacy of abundance. We want to be able to create abundance, but not just for our generation, but for generations to come. And the best way that I know of being able to do that is by being able to have a culture that contributes to it. And we want to build a legacy of abundance. Abundance comes from obtaining and developing your capital, whether it be cultural capital or spiritual capital or financial capital or whatever kind of form it might take, and all forms. And as you stack all forms and as you build all forms, they contribute to one another, and the abundance continues to grow. And that's really what we're trying to achieve. And so go back through, review some of the eight forms if you haven't heard them or you are forgot maybe what some of them are. Go back and listen to those episodes again, and then you develop some ways, some ways in which you can work to increase the levels of capital that are lacking, and to stabilize and diversify the capital that you are building, so that you might be able to have abundance. And then set some goals for each form of capital in 2013, and then a plan to achieve it. Well, hopefully that's been helpful to you. And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?
If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? But just like the plant that withers away, we will leave many seeds behind. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? Change your legacy. What will you do to change?